Hi there, and welcome to the COSI Talks podcast. My name is COSI Belloso. I'm a physical therapist with over 23 years experience, and my passion is working with the amputee and limb loss community. My mission with COSI Talks is to educate, inform, and empower amputees, their clinicians, family members, and caregivers. Now, along with being a physical therapist, I'm also a wife and a mother to four beautiful children, and I'm a recent breast cancer survivor. So while I'm not an amputee and I don't know what it's like to lose a limb, I do know what it means to have my world turned upside down from one day to the next and to have to go through the recovery and healing process. And I want to help you on your journey. So let's get comfortable. Be sure to grab your favorite drink and have a listen. Ooh, don't forget, please follow this podcast and leave a 5-star review and thumbs up. And if you have any questions or overly flattering comments, drop them below. But I am live now, so I'm running 10 minutes late, which is a lot even for me. I do apologize for that. So as I am kind of collecting my thoughts here and getting my notes together, I'm gonna let you guys jump on board. As you jump on board, guys, let me know who you are, where you're from, and what is in your mug this evening. For those of you who are watching the replay, I would love if you could just put replay into the comment section. If you do have any questions for me, feel free to put it into the comment section. I do go back after the show is over to check and see if there's any questions that I missed, and happy to answer those as well. Or if you just want to give me a shout out in the replay section, love that as well. All right, I see some of you ticking on board right now, and I'm just kind of like making my notes because I got a lot of questions tonight, which always makes me excited. I love having lots of questions, moving some things around here. Bob is always looking very dapper. Hey there, Eric, drinking your Pepsi, and you're listening to me from the YouTube channel. So guys, as a reminder, I am broadcasting to both my Facebook and my YouTube channel. Hola, Benny, what's going on, man? Cheers, guys. Trying out tea. I was told it would be good for me to drink peppermint tea. So I'm trying peppermint tea. Hey there, Kimberly. Got a lot of people from the YouTube channel. I like this. We got Scott coming in from West Virginia eating a late dinner because lost track of time working on a project. That's exactly what happened to me and why I am late this evening. I have a lot of stuff going on end of year, obviously, with my beautiful children. We've got a lot of wonderful Christmas activities going on with school and everything like that. But also, this is one of my busiest times of year for my COSI talks, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, just sharing some exciting news with you guys. We got Tom on board. All right, guys. Lots of people. Ooh, we had a nice uptick in people who just jumped on board right now. So guys, don't be shy. Those of you who just jumped on board, let me know who you are, where you're from, what you are drinking. Like I said, I got my peppermint tea here in my COSI talks mug. All right. What's going on, Pastor David? Good to see you. We've got Ernest coming in. Hola from the VAPT in San Diego, California. Wow. Got you guys coming in from California. This is awesome. So guys, once again, if you're watching the replay, comment replay. This is for folks who are not able to watch the show live. And if you have any questions, feel free to throw it into the comment section. We've got Linda coming in from Hurley. We got Andrea. I know my text was late, as was I this evening. It was just, it's been a week. It's been a week. Go madre, man, girl. We got to catch up. We got to catch up. It was just one of those mama 4 days I'm having. Just to give you guys a glimpse of my day today, it just made me laugh. You know, I had a busy work day, and then I had to pick up my girls early from school. I'm doing a telehealth doctor's appointment with them. And then I get in the middle of the telehealth appointment, I get a phone call from my boys' school that my son got hit in the face on accident and got his orthodontia knocked out of his, like literally knocked out of his mouth. So just had to stop everything, go grab him from school, take him to the orthodontist, get him put back together again, finish the telehealth with the girls and keep on going. Just another day in the life, right? All right, we got Dick Devers coming in. There's my Lev BK right there. We got Emily from Central PA. What's up, Bobby? Good to see you. This topic hits home to me to be in the next month. Okay, good. And Bobby, if you have any more questions that I may not cover, please feel free to put them in there. Yes, it's been wonky. So guys, let me just go ahead and introduce myself. For those of you watching me for the first time this evening, welcome. My name is COSI Belloso. I'm a physical therapist, amputee specialist here in Tampa, Florida. I've been a PT for 23 years, guys. I was renewing my license because we renew our licenses here in Florida and every other year in November. And it said on the date, you know, first date of license, December 3rd. So it was just kind of nice seeing that date. I was like, it's officially been 23 years that I have been licensed as a physical therapist, and you too, comadre. So this is kind of cool. So anyways, guys, this show is for amputees. It is for folks who have had an amputation. It is for folks who are caregivers, family members, and clinicians, and those who treat amputees. So this show is for you. So again, if you're a newcomer, don't be shy. Feel free to put your question in the comment section. This is for you. And I'm also going to put in my email address because that's another way to get in touch with me. So for those of you watching, if perhaps you don't want to put your question out here in the comment section, you're more than welcome to email me. So let's get started. Let's talk about Phyllis's question. Phyllis says, hi, I'm Kosi. I'm finding it hard to pivot with my shoe on my solid foot. Is this a normal difficulty? Do you have any suggestions? So answer is yes, Phyllis. It is normal to have a little bit of difficulty pivoting with your prosthetic foot. And the reason for it is, here, let's get Bob over here. Bob's, I don't know what's going on with Bob here today. One of my kids said Bob is living his best life. I don't know what that means. That's new kid talk. Anyways, so with our anatomical foot, we have a few different movements. We've got dorsiflexion, moving the toes up, plantar flexion, moving the toes down. In eversion, where you're kind of, Bob doesn't really have that great eversion, so it's kind of hard to demonstrate. Eversion, where it kind of just flares out this way, and inversion, where you're flaring this way. And then a combination of those movements gives you that rotation. It gives you the ability to pivot, right? That pivoting motion comes from that rotation. Also comes from a little bit of the rotation in the knee, and then obviously rotation up in the hip, right? So when we have a prosthetic foot, we're not going to necessarily have the same movement that we have in our anatomical feet, right? My buddy Reggie Schauer says all the time, we're trying to recreate divine design with man-made materials. We're doing a pretty good job because technology is coming a long way with these prosthetic feet than when I started 23 years ago. But one of the things that might be missing there is some of that pivot rotation movement, okay? So a couple of things you might want to ask your prosthetist is, what are the prosthetic feet out there on the market that have rotation? You know, College Park just came out with one this past year, actually. They came out with 3 or 4 feet this past year, but they also have one that really features a lot of nice rotation. And it really comes in nice play, especially for folks who like to do golfing, right? That nice rotation that you have to get down at the ankle joint. One thing to keep in mind is when you are adding rotation into the movement, you're sacrificing a little bit of stability, right? More mobility means less stability. So you have to gauge to see what it is that works best for you. If you're someone who's incredibly active, you're moving around all over the place, you can probably handle having more mobility in your prosthetic componentry. If you're someone that you're still unsteady and you need more support with your balance, then you need a foot that gives you a little bit more stability. Make sense? Ah, Dulcie, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Good evening, Denise. Good to have you in from North Carolina. Let's see. So Emily asks, how long should I be wearing my shrinker when I am not wearing my prosthesis? I wear it all the time when I'm not wearing my prosthesis, except at night when I'm sleeping, in order to let my skin breathe. Yesterday, my PT told me overnight is too long. It all depends. So the rule of thumb, usually when I tell people, I love the shrinkers, because they really help with that limb volume management. Okay. So the shrinker is that compression garment that most of you should have received shortly after your amputation once your doctor approved of it, right? So it's a compression garment and it helps with fluid management. Okay, so that first year, year and a half after surgery, some people may have a lot of fluctuation in volume in the residual limb because of the surgery, because of the fluid still collecting in the residual limb and the remodeling and the reshaping of the soft tissues in the leg. So lots of things changing. The shrinker helps with this. It does gentle compression, right, to push that fluid out and also to help shape that residual limb, okay? And in the general rule of thumb is to wear it 23 out of 24 hours a day, meaning the 1 hour you take it off just to do skincare and to do bathing. And then when you start wearing the prosthesis, the general recommendation is to wear it when you are not wearing your prosthesis, even at nighttime. Okay, now, Emily, again, you have to go by what your clinician recommends for you. But in general, I recommend my patients that they wear it at nighttime, especially when they're first learning to use that prosthesis. And the reason is because during the nighttime, you can have that rebound swelling come into effect. Now, if you have issues with your skin and you want your skin to breathe and your clinician is telling you to leave it off at night, again, that is between you and your clinician, and that's something you need to talk to them about. I also love shrinkers for people who have that morning swelling, right? There's a lot of people who tell me that when they get up in the morning, their residual limb is a little bit puffier and they have a hard time getting into that socket in the morning. So this is where wearing the shrinker at night can be a benefit here for helping manage that, okay? And again, there's no statute of limitations on that one. There's some folks who are years and years and years out of their amputation, and they're still wearing their shrinker at nighttime for that reason, so that they can fit into their socket in the morning. And then some of the folks, right, especially if they have a lot of soft tissue at the end of their limb, some folks actually prefer to wear their shrinker because it just gives them that comfort in the bed, in the sheet, so that the soft tissue is not flip-flopping around in the bed. Okay. So Denise says, I've been wearing mine overnight, haven't noticed any issues, but now concerned, is that too long? No, Denise, no. And again, if your skin is doing fine and you've been wearing it overnight, you're good. Okay. And again, practicing good skin hygiene, which is something that we talk a lot about on the show, is also a huge part of it. Okay. Again, guys, if your clinician is telling you not to wear it because of skin purposes, that is between you and your clinician, and you need to have that conversation with them. If you have issues with limb volume management, though, again, bring it up to your physical therapist and have that conversation. Ask them about that. Okay. We got Richard coming in from rehab. No coffee. Oh, David Donahue drinking his green tea. Denise says, or maybe I don't need to wear it anymore since I've changed suspension systems and I don't have the volume fluctuation anymore. And again, Denise, you are an experienced amputee at this point. So this is something that you can perhaps experiment with and just say, okay, let me just leave the shrinker off for one night and let's see what happens the next morning. Is my limb too puffy, in which case I need to use it, or did it do just fine? If you do find that you don't need to wear the shrinker at night anymore, I would still encourage you to keep it on hand because you just never know if there's going to be a night that, you know, for example, you went out for dinner and there's extra salt in the dinner because you're eating out instead of eating in your home. And, you know, the next morning you might wake up a little bit puffy. Or if you travel somewhere and you're going on a plane, you might need that shrinker to help with the limb volume management there. Hey there, Brian, you got your Bustelo on board? Harsh, good evening, Harsh. Say hello to your lovely wife and children for me, please. Emily says, how much does sodium affect residual limb volume? A lot, a lot. I don't have any fancy numbers or anything like that to tell you, but it does affect it. And it affects it, you know, it's not to say that it affects more than a person who has their anatomical limb. It's just that for me, if I have a salty bag of potato chips, right, the next morning, my wedding ring is going to be tight, which is not, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's obviously not a huge inconvenience. But if I'm an amputee and I have those same bag of salty potato chips and my residual limb volume is swollen or is bigger in the morning, then that's a problem because I'm going to have a harder time getting into my prosthesis, right? And I may run into some problems with some chafing or friction that can cause some skin breakdown, okay? So it's not to say you don't ever get to have salt and you don't get to enjoy the potato chips and things like that. It just means you have to be aware of how it affects your body on a day-to-day basis and what you need to do to help manage that, whether it's by wearing the shrinker at night, whether it's by timing your snacks, so maybe they're not right before you go to bed, or making sure that you drink enough water to help flush out that salt, as long as you're not on any water restrictions, right? So you got to kind of play with it and find out what works for you, okay? Dulcie says, I haven't worn mine in 40 plus years. Yeah, And guys, there's some people that they, after that first few months of wearing the shrinker, they, you know, they tossed it and that's it. They were done and they never had any issues with it. And then there's some people that they still like to wear it at night for comfort. Howdy, Van Gregory. All right, we got John Jones saying, good evening, Dulce. Oh, there we go. We got Patrick saying, hello. What's up, Patrick? All right, let me just take a sip of my tea here. That's actually not bad. I'm not usually a tea person. I am trying to learn to like it, and I'm trying peppermint tea. It's not bad. All right. Okay, here's the big question for the night. Don says, I'm a type 2 diabetic and I got an infection and I lost my other foot. Both are below the knee amputations and healing well and getting ready to be fit for the new prosthesis. Any advice on the things to expect? After my first amputation, it was a breeze, and 6 weeks after surgery, I was running on the treadmill. Okay. So this is kind of a sobering statistic. You know, the literature states that if you've lost your limb due to vascular disease or diabetes, you have a very high percentage of losing the second limb within 5 years. And unfortunately, it is a statistic that I see played out in my patient population and that I've seen among some of my viewers here. And it's something that's a little bit like, you know, kind of makes you gulp just a little bit. So one thing I always like to remind folks, you know, if you lost your limb due to vascular disease or diabetes, your diabetes and your vascular disease was not amputated with your limb. You got to keep the disease. It's a lousy trade. And I totally get it, right? It's a lousy, lousy trade. So what I mean by that, obviously, is that diabetes is still present in your body. The vascular disease is still working its magic in your body, right? And not the good kind of magic, right? So where I'm going with this is stressing how important it is to manage these comorbidities and these pathologies, right? And a lot of times when you see the person who's lost that limb, the second limb, a lot of it has to do with just the early management and how they were able to control or not control the diabetes or the vascular disease. Okay. Now, if it comes to that, so like in the example of this gentleman here who just said he lost his second limb below the knee, first thing I'm going to tell him is, guess what? You're still a diabetic, right? So you need to get a hold of that diabetes. You need to get control of that glucose, okay? Because it is still occurring in your body, right? And you lost your feet, okay? But now you need to also be aware of your hands, right? That's another, the extremities are usually the first that are affected most by diabetic, especially if there's a diabetic neuropathy involved, okay? You don't see upper extremity amputations anywhere near as much as you see lower extremity amputations due to diabetes, but it doesn't mean that there can't be damage, for example, with the neuropathy in the fingers, right? So first and foremost, I would say that is your priority, okay? If your glucose is not under control, get it there. Go see that endocrinologist, whoever it is that's following you for your diabetes, and figure out how to get that under control, okay? Whether it's with medication, combination of medication and diet modifications. Okay. When it comes to the actual prosthetic side of becoming a bilateral, okay, one thing to remember is your first amputation is now your strong leg, right? So when this gentleman had his first amputation, right, his BK side was the weaker leg, but he still had a full anatomical leg. Right? So he was able to pick up fairly quickly. And apparently he said he was able to start running within the first 6 weeks, which is amazing. Okay. It's amazing to be running within 6 weeks of a BK amputation, right? In this case, it might be just a little bit slower just because that BK is now the dominant leg, right? And you want to take it just a little bit slower because that leg is going to be taking a lot more of the abuse as you get used to using your other leg. Okay. The good news is because you've learned the gait mechanics from learning how to walk with a BK side, your brain is probably going to pick up on the gait mechanics even faster walking on the new BK side. Okay. So another thing to keep in the back of your head is watching your skin. Okay. Especially as a diabetic, you want to watch that skin, make sure it's not taking too much abuse. Okay. Again, now you're walking on two prosthetic legs, which means all that pressure and all of that, the forces are being transmitted into both residual limbs. All right. So you got to be careful with that skin and careful with that wearing schedule. Yes. And go to your physical therapist. Even if you did beautifully the first time around with your BK amputation, for the second time around, you need to go to your physical therapist, get that strengthening, get that gait training done. Yes. All right. We had some comments that came in. Let's see. Jeff says, eat some Chinese food and I can actually feel the sodium making my limb swell. Amen to that, man. But man, it tastes so good sometimes. Hey there, Thomas, coming in from California. And he says, I'm munching on a block of salt. You got your salt lick there, Thomas. Benny says, my second amputation was a year apart due to diabetes. Van Gregory says, if I want to eliminate a sock or two, I increase my sodium intake, but only for a night. There we go. What's going on, Luana? There's my girl right there. Let's see. Van Gregory also says, usually a large bag of chips or maybe just two large Gatorades will do it. That's right. And again, folks, you know, Van Gregory is an experienced amputee. As you get older with your amputation and you know how your body works and how your body reacts to certain foods and things like that, you're going to be able to make these adjustments yourself. All right. Okay. This was one, and I didn't get permission to share the picture. I didn't ask for permission. So I'm not able to show the picture. But someone sent me a picture of their residual limb, and it was a below the knee residual limb. Sorry, something came into my screen. And right on the incision line, there was a big open wound. Okay. And it was red, open wound. And obviously I recommended to this individual, you need to go see wound care doctor right away. And the individual told me, yes, I'm under the care of a wound care doctor. So I said, okay, all is well. But what this person told me was that he had gotten the wound healed and then he started wearing the leg again and the wound reopened. Right. So that's kind of the part I want to address. So there's a couple of things when I saw the picture of this wound as to why this happened. First thing, when you have a wound, whether it's a little blister or whether it's a big old gaping wound, when you have new skin forming, it's exactly that. It's brand new skin. It's baby skin. I call it baby skin. It's fragile, right? It's very susceptible, very vulnerable to friction and shearing forces, meaning it won't take much to rub that new skin off, right? So the wound can be completely closed, right? But that new skin right there, it's going to be very fragile and you have to baby it as you start wearing your prosthesis again. Otherwise, you're going to shear it right off. And that's what happened with this particular gentleman, right? And the other thing is, if you have a wound that was caused by wearing your prosthesis, you need to find out what about that caused the wound. Okay. Give me some slack here, guys, with my grammar. But basically, you know, was there friction in the socket? Is there a pressure point in the socket that is causing that friction in that particular area and causing that blister to continue to reopen over and over again? Okay. My kids are coming in from soccer. In this gentleman's case, what I noticed was that, you know, the wound was right on his incision line. Right. And he had an adhered incision. Right. So here's what I mean by that. And you have that scar from amputation, it should be nice and pliable. You should be able to move the scar and the skin should move the way you're seeing my skin move here. Right. It should be nice and pliable and move up and down like this. So in this case, the scar was adhered. So it was like stuck to the tissues underneath. And that's where he got the open wound, right? So if that scar line is stuck, that means that skin is not moving nicely, which means it's constantly going to be under tension. It's constantly going to have friction in the socket itself. So in his case, he needs to really watch that scar line. And his prosthetist is going to have to also be very, very vigilant about keeping the pressure off of that scar line. Okay. In some cases, this is where, again, your physical therapist can actually be really, really helpful. If you have a physical therapist who is practiced in cupping and in dry needling to help break up those scar tissue adhesions, right? It can be really, really effective to help break up the scar tissue so that that scar tissue starts to move along with the skin the way it's supposed to. Yeah? All right. Here we go. Let's see. So Jeff says, and Jeff is one of my prosthetists that likes to listen. And also it helps the bilateral to have a wider base of support. Glidewear is also a great option when recovering from a wound. Yes, and also Tegaderm. Tegaderm is kind of one of my favorites to use on the Glidewear. I'm not really familiar with that particular product. When it comes to an open wound, I think it's very particular to each individual. If it's just like a very small skin abrasion, just something simple like a bacitracin ointment can work. But if it's an actual wound, then that's something that needs to be addressed by a wound care specialist. When it comes to a wound that's completely closed and you have that new skin on there, I do like Tegaderm because it's just a nice clear, it looks like Saran wrap. It's like a medical grade Saran wrap and it just goes right on top and it prevents there to be friction on that area. So sometimes I like to use that, especially on my runners, if they sometimes develop a blister right there. Let's see. Jeff says, also, if you were unilateral and then became bilateral, it may require a different kind of foot type and you want to have both feet be the same feet. If they're different, you're going to have more difficult time getting gait symmetry. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Here we go. And then our prosthetists here are having a nice chit chat here. I love it. So Thomas is saying the Glide. Okay, it's a slippery double-sided fabric that changes the friction to happen between the fabric instead of the skin. Okay, I'm not familiar with that, but I'll have to look that one up. Thank you, Thomas. So let's go on to the next one, which is also piggybacking on skin issues. Susan asks, I'm so sorry I missed the show. I'm having really bad chafing issues. I'm going to a poultry show where I'll be walking a lot. I'm afraid I will screw myself up and not be able to function. Do you ever do personal consultations about this? So when it comes to the chafing, guys, I really like, hang on, please hold. All right. This is still one of my favorite products out there on the market because there's really not a whole lot out there on the market specifically designed for amputees. The VitalSit Skin Line. I've been using the stuff on my patients and my discount code is still active. So guys, if you go to VitalSit, let me see if I can remember there. I'm back. Just tell me in the comment section if you can see me, hear me. Not sure what that was all about. Nope. Marianne, you crack me up. Okay, I'm sorry. My connection is just apparently a little wonky. You just give me a thumbs up if I'm... Red light. In and out. I know. It's a whole new... Guys, you're... Nope, still off and on. No, it's good. It's... Okay, how about now, guys? Man, this thing is just being a real pain. Intermittent. Okay. Cutting out big time. Doggone it. Okay. Is it working? Am I working? Blinking, so I know you're still there. Blink once for yes, blink twice. Gosh. Y'all are killing me, seriously, Dawn. I'm just gonna affirm. Like, in the industry. All right, I'm gonna keep talking and hopefully. Okay. How about now? In the meantime, these messages are cracking me up, guys. I don't know what your emoji is, but it's kind of funny. It's like a very sick puffer fish. Okay, we're good? Are we back? Okay, let me get to, because man, I'll tell you what, guys, like I said earlier, I don't know if it cut out in this part. If y'all know of any Hollywood producers who want to come and produce this hot mess of a show, tell them to give me a call. More than happy. Did I PNF the camera? I'm not sure what that means, and I'm not sure if I want to know what that means, Ernesto. Let's see. All right, we're good. All right. Thank you guys for sticking around. Try to figure this thing out. Okay, so getting back to Vital Fit. Love their stuff, the liquid to powder. When it comes to the chafing part, I love this stuff. Basically, you can just keep layering it on and it doesn't get gummy. I've used it a lot with my runners here in hot, sticky, sweaty Florida. And we go on the runs and then they keep applying it during the run. And again, works great, helps with that chafing part. Hey, Van Gregory, Shoeless is back. Shoeless Joe Jackson, proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. Nothing quite that fancy that I used with the camera, more like a few choice words that I flung at my connection. Probably scared it into submission. Anyways, okay, next question. We've got Sunshine here, and she sent a question saying, how do I strengthen my pelvic floor as an above-the-knee amputee woman? I've struggled with incontinence ever since my amputation almost 2 years ago. Okay, and this is something that I've talked about a little bit on the show. It's a sensitive topic, and it's one of those topics that not a lot of people like to talk about. A lot of clinicians don't know to ask about it. So this is something that I am not an expert in this field, but I certainly know enough to be able to refer you to who is an expert. So the pelvic floor is basically any part of your body that meets the saddle. So when you think about sitting on a horse, the part of you that is in contact with the horse, that is your pelvic floor, right? So it's basically all the undercarriage here, okay? Now, the similarity between men and women is that the pelvic floor is made up of muscle. So it's like a muscle hammock, okay? There is no bones supporting it, right? It's basically the muscle hammock. And when it, as we age, as with any muscle, things can get weaker and they can tend to droop just a little bit, especially with gravity taking its effect. And women, this is a little bit more prominent because women have estrogen in their body that decreases as they get older, which means the muscle tends to be a little bit more lax and loses some of that elasticity, right? Also, as we have childbearing, right, it produces trauma to that area and stress to that area. So it can produce symptoms such as incontinence or the inability to hold your urine. It can also produce bowel incontinence, so the inability to hold stool in, right? And a lot of folks will be having these symptoms. A lot of my ladies will be having these symptoms and not want to discuss it, or they're being told that's just a normal part of the aging process and they just have to deal with it, right? Some of these other symptoms also include pain with intercourse, pain during menstrual cycles. So these are all symptoms that there's something possibly going on with the pelvic floor. Okay. I know, Jill, I know it's like, my connection is so terrible tonight and I do apologize for it. I tried a couple of things, guys. And right now I'm just keeping my hands off my computer so I don't knock myself off the connection again. Okay. So when it comes to pelvic floor dysfunction, usually the biggest, symptom I hear from women is that when they sneeze or when they giggle or something like that, they might have a little bit of incontinence or they have trouble getting to the bathroom on time. Now, as an amputee, some of these problems might be, even greater because of the amount of stress that you're putting onto that pelvic floor. Okay. So I've mentioned in the past before that as an amputee, you're expending more energy to walk, right? It takes more energy for you to walk compared to someone who has two anatomical legs. So that energy expenditure is being done by the muscles in your body, right? Your muscles are working harder, and some muscles might be working harder than they should be working, right? If you have weakness in one area, other muscles are going to pick up the slack, and that may not necessarily be a good thing. Okay. So in the case of, for example, in glute weakness, in core weakness, right? The pelvic floor may be trying to pick up some of that stress and it may be too much, right? So you may be experiencing more of those symptoms of incontinence or things like that when you're trying to walk. Okay. The good news is that there is specialties that address this. And specifically, I think to me, some of the best clinicians in the field for this are pelvic floor therapists. And I'm going to go ahead and write this down. Okay. So if you feel that you are experiencing pelvic floor symptoms and you just don't know, you know, what it is or where it's coming from, or if in fact it is pelvic floor, my two recommendations are, number one, go see your OBGYN, right? Go see your OBGYN doctor, your lady doctor, to make sure that there's nothing else going on from an infection standpoint or anything else going on. And number two, go get a referral for a pelvic floor physical therapist. Okay. And thankfully, there are so many of them out there nowadays that you can just Google pelvic floor physical therapist in my area, and you're going to get quite a few. And they do not have to be experienced with working with amputees. They will be able to work with you even if they've never worked with an amputee before, okay? And this has been a game changer for many of my ladies. All of the ladies in the past, like I said, I am not a pelvic floor physical therapist. That's probably one of probably the only specialty in physical therapy that I haven't worked in at some point in my career. But I've referred several of my patients to pelvic floor specialists, and it's a quality of life game changer for them. So again, it's something that is a topic that not a whole lot of people like to ask about, but it's something I do like to address on the show, because if you are experiencing these symptoms, this is a really good way to get help. And for my men, it's not quite as common in men, but it can happen as well. And yes, pelvic floor physical therapists also treat men for these pelvic floor issues as well. Yes? Okay. Jill, I am so sorry. Guys, is the reception coming in better right now? Yes, no, maybe so. I get a little nervous when I don't see comments. Oh, there they are. Thank you guys. Okay. Whew. Going through my questions here. Thank you guys. Thank you. And thank you for sticking around. Ooh. Okay. So here was another, somebody else sent me a video, and I love it when you guys send me videos because I like to see the walking and all that kind of fun stuff. So this particular individual, he is a bilateral above the knee amputee. And again, I wasn't able to get permission before the show started to share the video because I just didn't have time to get his permission. So I can't show you the video. But he was showing me how he was walking with bilateral above the knee, microprocessor knees, using his two Lofstrand crutches, totally knocking it out of the ballpark, looking amazing, which for bilateral AKs to be walking, it's a lot of work. Talk about energy expenditure right there. And I just noticed though that, you know, and again, me nitpicking, his left leg, he was progressing it quite beautifully, but then the right leg, it was doing what we call a lateral whip. So when he would bring the leg and it was swinging through the air, it would kind of like whip like this to the side. So I kind of gently pointed that out and I said, hey, you know, I'm not sure if you've noticed this, but you know, you might want to bring this to your prosthetist, right? And then he responds back and he says to me, well, I have a new socket, but it's not fitting well. So it rotates. And I'm like, yep, that would certainly explain why you're having a lateral whip. Because I'm just like, that's one of the causes is when the socket is rotated and he has to compensate by whipping the leg in. But what really just kind of made me go, is he said, you know, it's a new socket, so I'm stuck with it. And that just, you know, that just of course sent me on my Cozy Talk soapbox. And I'm just sitting there going, no, you're not stuck with it. And again, I am not an expert when it comes to insurance reimbursements and things like that. But I do know that if you have a socket that was not made well and it's not fitting you well, it's fitting you poorly, it is up to the prosthetist to fix it. Okay. And again, I put the onus on the clinicians, whether it's the physical therapist or the prosthetist, you know, and I know we have some really great prosthetists here on the show, and I'm pretty sure they're going to agree with me when I say this, you know, if your prosthetist did not make a socket that is fitting you properly, it's up to them to figure it out and get it to fit properly. Okay. And again, I don't know all of the circumstances behind this particular socket, and perhaps there's a very reasonable explanation for this. But I've had several of you in the past that said, yeah, you know, I was just given a socket and I tried to tell the person that it wasn't fitting properly, and they told me there wasn't anything else that they could do about it. And I heartily find that to be unacceptable. So again, guys, you know, and to see this particular video, you know, again, this gentleman, it's obvious that he put so much work into getting himself to this point, and to not be able to really walk to the best of his ability because his socket's not fitting well. No, not okay. Not okay. So if there's anybody out there right now that needs to hear this, listen carefully. It is not okay for your socket to be hurting. It is not okay for it to be poorly fitting. Okay? Not okay. Because if your socket is not comfortable, if your socket's not fitting well, you are not going to be able to walk properly with it. And that is the whole point of having a prosthetic leg. Okay. Rant over. Those of you who've been watching my show now, you're just like, here she goes again. There she goes. Yep. She's ranting and raving again. Yeah. And again, guys, I don't know the particulars behind this gentleman's relationship with his prosthetist. I don't know if the prosthetist perhaps is actively working to try to find a solution. Okay. But it just kind of like triggered something in me when I heard them say, well, I'm stuck with this socket because it's a new one. And again, not an insurance expert here, but I have seen many prosthetists that they get a socket, patient coming in with a poorly fitting socket, and they get insurance to approve a new one because that poorly fitting socket is not doing the job. Okay. My two cents there, my two cents. All right, guys, I have a couple of announcements for the coming year, which I am so excited. I have been a little bit quieter on social media. As some of you have noticed, probably in the past couple of weeks, because I'm working furiously behind the scenes to get everything ready for 2024. Among that are my sponsors, and I am so excited to have all the sponsors coming back for 2024. And I love this because I love building a relationship with the same companies and just not only building the relationship, but also building the knowledge. So everything that we learned this year, we're going to be able to learn it even more in depth for next year for the sponsored shows. So I'm really, really, really excited about that. Oh, Mike, I appreciate that very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So guys, you will be seeing a lot more activity for me. I've got some really hopefully cool things planned on social media where I'm trying to put out more education for you, more daily education for you on my social media posts. And I'm starting, you know, figuring out how it's all going to work. But one thing, if you guys could help me, because this also helps me with my sponsors, if you have not already done so, please consider signing up for my text messages. I do not sell your number. I don't give it to anybody. I don't spam your phone. But I do send text messages whenever I go live. So if you are interested in receiving links when I go live or other special announcements, you can go and just text Cozy Talks in all capital letters to that particular number. Okay. And then there's one other announcement that I wanted to give you guys because you guys have only a couple of more days left. And I'm going to put this over here really quick. Bear with me for just a minute, guys. Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. Ah, where did it go? Here we go. Okay. So those of you who have already filled out my survey, awesome. Those of you who have not filled out my survey, shame on you, but that's okay. You've got your chance right here. So at the end of every year, guys, for the past couple of years, I've put out a very simple 10-question survey. And these are questions from myself and from my sponsors. Basically, we want to hear from you. We want to know from you what it is that you want to see from us, right? This is to make the show better for you, okay? And I really, really do take to heart everything that's put onto this survey and your responses. It takes less than 3 minutes to fill out. I don't like those really long surveys. They drive me insane. There's a couple of fill in the blanks. So the more information you give us, the more we can learn. And then at the very end, if you put your email address at the bottom, you'll be entered in for a raffle giveaway, which my sponsors each donated a little something. And I'm also putting some something in the raffle basket. So it's a pretty nice little swag bag raffle basket for one lucky winner. But you need to put your email address at the bottom of the survey because that's how I'm picking the winners, okay? If you've already filled out the survey, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you have not, there is the link. So if there's one thing you guys can do for me tonight is fill out that survey, pretty please. And this is also for my prosthetists, for my family members listening in, because again, this show is for the entire amputee community, and that includes everybody in here listening. Thank you, Tom. Really appreciate it. All right. We got one more question here from Kesha. Kesha says, what is a good way to explain to a family member, father, the struggles with being a below the knee amputee? My father believes I should just be able to get up and go, even though I'm in quite a bit of pain from bottoming out. That's a hard one, Kesha. And this is something that always makes me cringe just a little bit when I hear someone say, oh, that person's walking with a bionic leg. That means they probably can walk faster and jump faster and run faster. And it makes me cringe a little bit on the inside because I'm just like, no, it's really not like that. And I remember even having discussions with my own dad as I was becoming more and more involved in the amputee community and treating patients. You know, my dad was very curious and he would ask me questions about this. And he was just genuinely curious because he wanted to learn. And there were a lot of misconceptions that he had. So again, Kesha, just good communication. sometimes I wonder, and again, this is just me kind of reaching out there, especially if it's someone who's close to you and they're seeing your struggle and they want to see that you're doing well. And so they might minimize how much you're having to struggle because they don't want to acknowledge that what you're going through is really, really hard. So just being honest and saying, you know, no, Dad, this is really a difficult skill for me to do. And my skin is really taking a beating right now and learning how to do some of these skills. Perhaps taking your dad to one of your prosthetist appointments so that he can see what it is that is involved with making your leg, you know, making him a part of that process, of the recovery process. And just asking, just say, Dad, what is it that you want to know? You know, and just answering the questions as best as you can. And you know, I really don't have the perfect answer for that one, Kesha. All I can say is just as much as you can communicate with your dad, as much as you can provide education. The Amputee Coalition does have some really great resources and articles on the website just to kind of explain things. For what it's worth, I know my website and my YouTube channel have a lot of videos that explain the whys behind a lot of these things. But yeah, guys, real quick before we hang up, what are your thoughts on this? How did you talk to your loved ones when they assumed that it was easy to be an amputee? What are some of the questions that you guys, I want to hear from you guys. How did you talk to your family members about this? Kimberly, thank you very much. David, thank you very much, guys. I really, really appreciate that. Thank you. So guys, what would be your recommendations for Kesha how she can talk to her dad to maybe help him understand, you know, that it is a bit of a struggle? I'm really liking this peppermint tea. Richard says one-on-one about troubles, talking one-on-one with a person. Thank you, Harsh. Emily says, I just explained the process I'm going through and the setbacks that I'm facing. Good old communication. Marianne says, my kids definitely know how much I struggle, but I also figure that your kids know how amazing you are at your perseverance, Marianne. I have never met someone so persistent in the best possible way as Marianne. Sean says, I love peppermint mochas. I know, those are good too. Richard says, support from the peer visitors. Denise says, I'm fortunate I didn't have that issue, but agree with your advice, communication. And Kesha, I think a lot of it stems from, and it just occurred to me now, a lot of it just stems from misinformation. So one thing, just hit me now. One thing that I share with folks when they make a comment of, oh, it must be easy for that person to use a leg because it's a metal leg or titanium, whatever, I explain the statistics of energy use, right? So for a BK, depending on the level of amputation, you're using anywhere from 10% to 40% more energy to walk than your dad. So that might be a good opening statement right there. And just saying, Dad, I'm using 10 to 40% more energy to walk than you are. And again, if that's kind of a hard statistic that doesn't really jive, I'll tell people it's the same thing as me going out and running a mile. And that's the amount of energy that an amputee, a below the knee amputee, is using just to walk. Right? So sometimes when you present those perspectives, it might help the person see and understand. It makes them go, oh, okay. So you can say to your dad, Dad, imagine having to go through your entire day at a slow jog. You know how tired you would be by the end of your day. That's how tired I am just from walking in a prosthesis. Yeah. Emily says, it's frustrating when people know I have a prosthesis, but I'm not using it all the time because there's times where it's not always the best situation to use it. It's a lot of donning and doffing, which can be exhausting. And David says, if you're overweight, it's worse. Yeah, because you're having to carry around, obviously, that much more weight, right? All right, guys. So we're going to wrap it up for this evening. Next week, it's going to be general Q&A as always. And guys, those of you signing up again, if you want to sign up for my text alerts, text COSI Talks, all one word, capital letters, to that phone number. And you can also text me your questions. Some of you have been texting me your questions, and I love it because it's right there and I can text you back. So go ahead and do that. So next week, guys, general Q&A, open season on the physical therapist. So send me your questions and I'll try to get you some answers. In the meantime, guys, thank you for filling out that survey. Share this show after it's closed. Share it to your support groups. Share it to your pages if you like. And as always, thank you for letting me be a part of your lives this evening. I will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.